Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Too fast. Sorry, I was too fast getting going. I was talking with somebody, Rim Master Mugo, as it turns out, about the whole business of letting go of opinions and the importance of that in training. And also our mutual experience in monastic training of not despising doing something that you don't want to do. And also the importance of that, particularly in monastic life, where that's very much emphasized, to do what is asked. And also how people can miss out on the training that comes with that. With that willingness to, as I say, do what needs to be done, and also to find ways of letting go of judgments and of willingness to undertake that which is good to do, even though we might find it difficult. And also not limiting ourselves in terms of what we might end up doing in the future.
Making sense.
As with a lot of instruction in Buddhist training, the instruction is not the goal. So the letting go of opinions is not the goal. It's in order to see something more. It's not, it really doesn't have anything to do with suppressing one's opinions. It has to do with letting go of something in order to experiencing something better, if I can put it that way. To exercise any form of intuitive judgment in training, it's necessary to learn how to let go of one's fears, as I say, opinions and wishes, and letting those fears, opinions, and wishes take their true place in training, which is as indications of what we need to look at. So if we find ourselves having a strong view or opinion about something, it's an indication of where we need to pay attention to what our mind is doing. Also, of course, these things are rather writ large now, where with a large number of people going down rabbit holes, which I'm sure everybody understands the meaning of, and what seem like quite sensible people can go off on tangents to such a degree that they lose all sense of perspective. And I said before about when people lose perspective, their voices start becoming, go up an octave and become more shrill. And people also start to become abusive towards other people. And as well as defensive. And also, when it really sets in, when this type of delusion really sets in, they start sounding like they are getting all their clues for how to speak from other people, if you know what I mean. In other words, it's sort of like when you encounter people who have a particular conspiracy theory. They tend to all sound alike because they are not actually, how do I put this? They can think that what they're doing is exercising, you know, individuality of thought or freedom of thought, but in fact they're making themselves subject to other people's thoughts or other people's ideas and opinions. And that's why they end up sounding remarkably similar to other people holding the same conspiracy theory. Because in conspiracy theories, there develops a type of orthodoxy, if I can put it that way. The only way it makes sense is if people repeat that it's making sense. If that sort of makes sense. So they have to repeat to themselves the various, I hesitate to say mantras, slogans, the various slogans, and repeat them to themselves and be defensive because it's all of a whole cloth. They can't look at pieces of it. You know, as most people can with any other idea, shall we say, oh, I don't know, people who take up painting or craft are capable of looking at a piece of that craft and getting some advice about how to improve it. They don't feel that if somebody says, here's a better way of doing this particular piece of crochet, they don't feel that this is somehow attacking the whole of crochet, if that sort of makes sense. Or maybe it doesn't. because I'm thinking about one of the other priors actually raised in the order context of how to help people who have gone down these various rabbit holes and will not listen, if I can put it that way, and cause grief to themselves and to their families. And I thought, well, I haven't actually encountered that very much in our congregation or the people I teach. Maybe they're afraid to tell me their little, conspiracy theories. But I've never noticed them even drop them in vulnerable moments. I must go home now because I'm going to leave on a spaceship, you know, in the next moment or anything along those lines. Also part of these sorts of delusions is the feeling of being special and of being privy to something that other people don't know or don't understand. Now, in training, we're taught that if that comes up for us, it's one of the signs that we have to watch our opinions and views. If we start thinking that we are privileged or superior to other people because of what we know. And so I think the instructions regarding training are a great antidote to these type of things, interestingly enough. Primarily because we're taught to watch our minds, you know, to watch what the mind is doing, to watch where we chase after things in our own minds, or to, there's that that cartoon called Bloom County, you know, if some of you would be familiar with the penguin. And he was always getting drawn into sales promotions on television. And so there's the thing where he's talking to the television and also to the phoned in and said, yes, 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 I do want the turnip twaddler and the free pocket diaper steamer. I'll take 200 of them. And when they arrive, of course, there's piled up 200 packages of a pocket diaper steamer, whatever that is, and a turnip twaddler. But oftentimes, the reason why people fall into these delusions, and also actually scams for that matter too, because I've been thinking about that with the Theranos stuff, you know, going on, that company, which I'm not following assiduously, but you can't help it. You know, it's in the air. They're in the middle of their trials. And thinking about that and thinking about how people become deceived, aside from the fact that, you know, somebody's deceiving them and they're inclined to trust the person, but also why people... I remember somebody in our congregation, there was this television program, and they had their child, they parked their child in front of it and used to, you know, have the child watch it. And they were telling me about it, and I said, I think it might be a good idea if you sat down and watched it with the child. And then when she did, she came back to me and she said, oh my God, I sit my child down to watch somebody I wouldn't let near them in real life. And how, you know, how this sort of thing works and how people fall into it. And also how that it isn't all that different from the various ideas and opinions we have in daily life about, you know, other people and or situations that we misinterpret. It's just that training teaches us how to not necessarily buy what our mind is telling us. There used to be a bumper sticker that said, don't believe everything you think. And I was with one of the other monks of Mount Shasta, and we saw the bumper sticker, and somebody said, well, it's actually, don't believe anything you think. Not that you don't use what you think as a guiding principle, but that you don't, how do I put it? You don't make it into a god for your life. You don't make any idea or opinion the whole thing that you follow in your life. And as I've said before, Buddhism is the same way. Buddhism is a system, if I can put it that way, developed over a period of time having to do with liberation. But it has nothing to say really about the Buddhist way to fix a toilet plunger, okay? And a number of delusions, part of the problem is they do a type of thing that covers all contingencies. You know, no matter what you do, you consult this particular idea or view or opinion. Anyway, I'll stop there.